The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Who fought at Vimy Ridge, and give thanks to the many freedoms the victory brought our young country. Thank you.
Barring no more member statements, we'll now move on to orders of the day with oral questions put by members to ministers. Time is now 2:17. We'll conclude at 3:07. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what a missed opportunity today is for people in Nova Scotia who had been told to expect real change to the way their government operates and have been let down today. In a province that relies on small businesses to create jobs and employ Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, the government is once again relying on tax increases and projections of greater tax revenue to address its fiscal challenges instead of making the real reforms that Nova Scotians have been told to brace for. Mr. Speaker, for our small businesses, today they face a $30 million increase in their taxes as the tax credit for them is being greatly reduced. I will ask the Premier, why did he decide to raise the taxes on small business by $30 million today instead of make the major changes that he told Nova Scotians were coming?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have not raised the tax on small business, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of fact, we have not raised the taxes, Mr. Speaker, on Nova Scotians or small businesses. What has changed, Mr. Speaker, is those Nova Scotians who have incorporated themselves so that they can get around the tax system, Mr. Speaker, so they can pay themselves through dividends to reduce their ability to pay tax. We've closed that gap like every other province has, Mr. Speaker. When the small business tax lowers, so has that tax credit, Mr. Speaker. So lawyers who found a way around it, Mr. Speaker, today are being asked to contribute, Mr. Speaker. Chartered accountants, those who know how to figure it out, Mr. Speaker, we're asking them to contribute.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact is the previous NDP government closed that gap when they reduced the threshold on small business in the budget a few years ago, something that the Premier then opposed. Now, whatever way you want to put it, the small business of Nova Scotia will pay $30 million more in the upcoming year than they paid last year. And they are not the only ones. In a province where everyday working Nova Scotia families are already tapped out, paying the highest income taxes in the country, Mr. Speaker, they face a hidden tax increase through bracket creep of $30 million more today, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians were told to brace for real reform. I'll ask the Premier, why did he decide to dig $30 million deeper into the pockets of everyday Nova Scotia working families instead of make the changes that he told Nova Scotians were coming?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the leader of the Conservative Party couldn't be further wrong in all of his assumptions here, Mr. Speaker. It's becoming commonplace in this house. The fact of the matter is the small business rate has not changed in this province, Mr. Speaker. If you were a small business owner in this province, the tax you were paying yesterday, you were paying today, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is we've closed a loophole around the fact, Mr. Speaker, that there are people who have incorporated themselves to get around paying their fair share of taxes. Why does the leader of the Conservative Party believe that a small business in rural Nova Scotia employing four or five people should be treated differently than a lawyer in downtown Halifax who's figured out how to get around the tax system by incorporating themselves and paying themselves through dividends? Tell us why.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the only thing that's becoming commonplace in this House is a Premier that doesn't answer the questions, because my question was about the income taxes paid by Nova Scotia families and the hidden increase in their personal taxes. Of course, the other thing that's becoming commonplace in this House is that when we get to budget day, instead of making real changes to the way the government operates, this government, like many before, just reaches deeper into the pockets of Nova Scotians. That's the story of the budget today, Mr. Speaker. What was all the hullabaloo about? What was all the tough talk about? What was all the bracing people for real change to the way government operates when all that's happening is they're digging deeper into their pockets? That's what the budget shows. So I'll ask the Premier, why did he pick tax increases over real change?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have not chosen tax increases. Mr. Speaker, what we've asked is that all Nova Scotians pay their fair share. And those that have figured out how to incorporate themselves, like chartered accountants, Mr. Speaker, should pay their fair share of taxes. We believe that in equity across the board. Fact of the matter is, this is a budget that is dealing with the structural challenges facing this province. We've introduced one single health authority, Mr. Speaker, treating our health system as one entity in this province, which will allow us to allow mobility of workers, allow us to maximize the value of the money being spent on that. Mr. Speaker, today we invested in young Nova Scotians in a public education system because that moves forward. And Mr. Speaker, for far too long, the other two parties believed you threw money at economic development. The fact of the matter is, we've cleared up the structural challenges inside of government, and we're going to allow the private sector to drive job growth just as it should be.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, over the past year, we've seen quite a bit of turmoil in health care in this province. This government was busy picking fights with health care workers while home care wait lists grew by 80%. We have record high waits for long-term care. ICU beds have closed. Nurses have to be flown in from out of province. ERs are overcrowded and closed. Well, Mr. Speaker, this budget does nothing in terms of a prescription to address any of those problems, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. With less than 1% funding increase for the Department of Health, I want to ask the Premier, what is he going to cut next to maintain this very unrealistic budget plan?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for her question. I want to congratulate the Minister of Health for doing a tremendous job, Mr. Speaker. In these most challenging times, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health continued to control his budget, unlike previous Ministers of Health. He's investing in orthopedic surgeries, waitlist, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that more Nova Scotians get that surgery on time, Mr. Speaker. He's putting more money in home support, Mr. Speaker. He's allowing more money to ensure that Nova Scotians get an opportunity to stay in their house longer, Mr. Speaker. Just imagine what this government could have done if that government hadn't capitulated and given away $700 million in unrealistic tax and unrealistic wage increases, Mr. Speaker. We could have $200 million more to invest in health care in Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. The Premier is just being silly when he talks about giving away money. Giving away money to health care providers who provide the care to patients in this province. Mr. Speaker, this budget today shows an increase overall in health care spending of only 0.8%, which means, Mr. Speaker, $33 million. Mr. Speaker, that government has invested more in the Yarmouth Ferry than they're putting into the health care system in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. I'll ask the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party to get on with the question and also to retract the term silly in reference to the Honourable Premier. That is an unparliamentary term. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, I certainly apologize for calling the Premier silly. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask what it will take for this Premier and this government to understand what is really needed, realistically, to provide quality health care to the people of Nova Scotia, where and when they need it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, there isn't a single Nova Scotian who believes throwing more money at any of the problems facing this province is the solution, Mr. Speaker. We have tried that for far too long. And let me be clear, Mr. Speaker. We're being fair to everyone who works across government, everyone who delivers services to Nova Scotians, and every Nova Scotians are going to have to be part of this journey of getting our province back to fiscal health. Just imagine if we'd had wage increases that kept pace to the growth in our economy instead of exceeding it at the rate the former government did. It would be $200 million we could have in this House to invest in Nova Scotians, to provide the kind of tax breaks the other side of the House are looking for, Mr. Speaker. It's about showing leadership, and it's about following and spending the money that you have, not spending future growth until you earn it.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, from all the havoc Nova Scotians have had to put up with in the health care system since this government came to power, now with this budget they will have to put up with a great deal more as they see patient care continuing to deteriorate, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the Premier, when will he admit his distraction with his non-health care plan has resulted in a crisis in health care in this province?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I couldn't disagree more with the leader of the Democratic Party. I want to remind her of the investments we paid in orthopedic wait times, Mr. Speaker, is a $2 million investment. I want to talk about the $3.7 million that we're investing in home care, Mr. Speaker, not to mention the supports that we're providing to keep people in their homes longer, Mr. Speaker. We're continuing to invest in the things that matter to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, in a sustainable way, one that lives within our means.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Finance. Nova Scotians want good jobs here in Nova Scotia, and the Ivanhoe Report highlighted the importance of natural resources to the Nova Scotia economy. Today's budget appears to do nothing to encourage resource development in the province. So I'm left to ask the Minister today, what role does the Minister see for natural resources to generate government revenues?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased to answer that question from the member opposite. There is tremendous news in today's budget about natural resources. The move to take inspection and enforcement activities out of the Department of Natural Resources, along with agriculture and fisheries and other departments, and centralize them will mean that the department will focus solely on the development of the industry, solely on supporting growth, helping to find innovation, helping those sectors to grow and prosper and hire more people in this province. They will not have the policing side of that issue.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Minister for that answer. And I turn my attention to our natural gas revenues. The Ivanhoe Report calls on the government to put in place a comprehensive development plan by the end of this year, by the end of 2015. And we know that the government banned onshore gas development, and today we know the dramatic drop in offshore royalty revenues from $40 million down to $19 million. We can see that significant drop. So my question for the Minister is, what is the government's plan for sustainable resource development and the much-needed jobs that go with it?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. And turning to the Energy Department, essentially, is what you're asking about in the offshore oil development. I said in my speech there are two large commitments made here by two different groups of oil companies, $1 billion each for exploration and seismic and geoscience work, and that will make a huge difference, exactly. BP and Shell are both committed to this province. You know, we have to, of course, hope that that goes well. The decrease in revenue from this year is about our existing fields, and they have taken a hit, but we have to look forward. We've got great things in the future.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today companies in the film, television, and digital media industry were hit with a 75% tax increase. To make matters worse, the government also eliminated film and creative industries Nova Scotia, an organization whose mandate was to promote and grow our film industry. And as a result of these, more than $20 million in cuts to our creative community and over 2,000 jobs province-wide are now at risk. my question for the Premier. Could he please explain why he's risking Nova Scotia's successful film, television, and digital media industry?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all members and those Nova Scotians who continue to give advice to government in the preparation for the budget. I'm pleased to say that the film tax credit, Mr. Speaker, is in place in this province. What has changed, Mr. Speaker, is that it was a non-refundable tax credit where they got, Mr. Speaker, 100% of the money, whether they pay taxes in this province. What we've changed is that 25% of it's here. The fact of the matter is the other 75% is there if you pay taxes in this province. All we're asking for is to pay your taxes. We'd be more than happy to give you the credit.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, today, following the Minister's budget, Mark Allman, a very well-known film producer, said that a stake had been driven through the heart of the Nova Scotia film industry, Mr. Speaker, with this budget. So my question to the minister, to the Premier, is this. Why on earth did he refuse to consult with the Nova Scotia film industry before making such a terrible decision that will put at risk many jobs in our province and cost us literally thousands, millions of dollars?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all those Nova Scotians who continue to work in this province, continue to drive economic growth, and continue to provide I'm looking forward to answering the question from the member from Chester when she gets up and asks me one, Mr. Speaker. I'm looking forward to that. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, that tax credit is still in place. All we're asking, Mr. Speaker, is that you pay taxes in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of the Environment. The deadline for the Northern Pulp to file an appeal on the Department's industrial approval has approached. And over the last couple of months, the Minister has been unwilling to share with the mill the background information on which his department wrote the industrial approval, leaving the mill in the dark on how a number of requirements were reached. So many people in Pictou County are wondering why the department is being so secretive and questioning whether the department had the proper expertise to draft an industrial approval with the conditions it has. So my question for the minister is, did the minister hire a consultant to help draft the industrial approval? And if so, how much did it cost?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. It's clear that the constituents, that the people of Nova Scotia, particularly from his riding and the area of Pictou, this is a question of interest and concern. I guess the first thing is that I'm struggling with the premise of the first question, suggesting that I've been unwilling or secretive in some form in engaging with the mill or the general public with respect to how we came to the position that we did with the industrial approval that went out the door, Mr. Speaker. So I'm struggling with that because this was the most transparent process, open and transparent process. Staff engaged as well as senior member deputy with the mill officials and the public in creating this IA. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister need not struggle with the question of transparency when he's asked a simple question, whether or not he hired a consultant, and you heard his answer. Nothing to do with whether or not he hired a consultant. So I'll ask another question for the minister today. Though the minister has been largely silent on this issue, it now falls back in his hands, will fall in his hands, to decide on whether or not any appeal that's launched goes forward. So it will be hard for those involved not to wonder if the minister has a conflict of interest in making the decision after his department issued the document to begin with. So my question for the minister is, does the minister really feel that going through a lengthy appeal process is a better option than sitting down with the mill and sharing the background information to come up with a solution?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I apologize to the member opposite that I didn't get to answer the question in advance, but I believe members from the other side of the House raised previous points of order with respect to the length of time that we take to answer our questions. So I'm trying to adhere to the rules of the House, Mr. Speaker. To answer that question, no, I didn't hire a consultant, but we did rely on information from various sources, including consultants, including the mill and the general public, and the expertise that exists within the Department of Environment, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the second portion of the question, Mr. Speaker, with the work that we're doing, it has been very open and transparent, Mr. Speaker. I beg the member opposite, if he's wondering whether we should go through, certainly happy to hear from the member opposite what he wants to do in this situation.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Poor oral health care drastically affects a senior's quality of life and their overall health. This issue is particularly troublesome given the challenges with delivering oral health care to those living in long-term care facilities. The Canadian Dental Association has released a number of recommendations to help seniors maintain good oral health. They recommend an oral health screening be performed upon admission, annual examinations by dentists, and suitable infrastructure to support the appropriate delivery of needed dental care. So my question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, will the recommendations by the Dental Association be included in the Minister's soon-to-be-updated continuing care plan and in the service standards for long-term care delivery?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and the member opposite and Foreign Minister of Health asked an excellent question around seniors' dental care. We will now move on to phase two of a provincial strategy, as well as in the continuing care update. This is one of those areas probably most likely will be addressed in a comprehensive provincial strategy around oral health care.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much. And I forgot to table the recommendations from the Dental Association. But, you know, oral health challenges are a sign of the times as a growing percentage of our seniors' population has kept more of their natural teeth than in the past. Not only is this a challenge in long-term care facilities, but it's also a growing issue for seniors to remain in their homes. As we know, dental care can be very expensive and sometimes unattainable for those folks. Dental Association recommends that caregivers be trained to recognize the role that oral health care plays in our overall health. So my question, again, does the Minister consider this a priority and that he has made sure that care policies reflect the needs to address oral health in seniors?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and this is a very significant area, both for the young members of our population as well as our seniors. And if the previous government had consulted with the Dental Association, we would have been well underway with a comprehensive oral program in this province.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you will be to the Minister of Agriculture. The Minister would be aware, as would many others, that last summer there was a significant tropical storm, Arthur, which caused considerable damage in the apple industry, Mr. Speaker, and I know that the Minister has been contacted, as have other levels of government, to initiate a process of agri recovery, and I wonder if the Minister could update us this afternoon on where that stands.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This is a very important topic for the apple producers in the province, and fire blight has been introduced to the province as a result of the hurricane last year. And in February this year, we approached the Ag Recovery Program and indeed did start to work with the federal government and taken other steps so far to address this issue in the industry.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the Minister for that answer. I would just follow that up with a comment around knowing the timing being very important, that the apple industry is an important piece of our economic development and so on in this province.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Hants West has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, to the Minister, I would ask a time frame for the process to be initiated. If he could speak to that based on the importance of this industry and the fact that the apple industry is already well underway and working toward this year's production.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
To give the Honourable Member a more accurate update, and indeed we did have a survey that's going to go out. It had to be previewed by Ottawa. That's already been completed. As of yesterday, Perennia has held some programs around how you treat and deal with fire blight. And on the later this month, we're going to have a mitigation sheet provided to the industry by Perennia. And indeed, we've had close to between two workshops we've had on this. We've had over 105 participants already. So we're well on the way to addressing this issue. It is a serious issue, but indeed, we have to help the industry every way we can.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Very much, Mr. Speaker. My question for you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, patients, healthcare providers, film industry folks are not the only casualties in this budget, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotian students learned today that the 3% cap on tuition increases has been removed for this year, Mr. Speaker. Administration in universities are now free to raise tuition to whatever level they decide, and students will have to shoulder that burden, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Advanced Education how this particular measure in the budget is acceptable.
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I know that students and families who are struggling with the cost of education, for them, any increase is stressful, and it wasn't a decision made lightly. When tuition was frozen a number of years ago, some of the universities were charging far more than others for certain programs, and the result is every year when there was a 3% increase, that disparity was exacerbated. This change will be brought in to assist those universities that have, in fact, seen a greater disparity over the number of years. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, with the astronomical increase in administration in the universities over the past number of years, with the large six-figure salaries, one would have thought that the universities should have first been asked to look at their own administration, like has been done in the healthcare system, Mr. Speaker, but apparently that's not the case. This government is looking to the students who already carry a disproportionate level of debt as they go out into the labor force, and is one of the reasons why we end up saying farewell to Nova Scotia to so many of our students, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister if she will tell this House where in the consultation that she did around the province this was recommended as one of the things that measures that the government should take with respect to university tuition.
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to let the Honourable Member know that in the recent Canadian Post-Secondary Performance Impact 2015 report from the Higher Education Quality Council of Ontario, Nova Scotia was ranked number one in the country for its access to higher education. And I'll table that report. And if the minister, the former minister, was so concerned about the astronomical salaries at universities among administration, of course, she could have done something to deal with it then. I can guarantee, in fact, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, does the member for Chester St. Margaret's have something she'd like
please
to say?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education has the floor.
And I would like to remind the Honourable Member that I will be bringing in accountability legislation for universities later this session. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, Deep Panuk has provided Nova Scotians millions of person hours of employment over the life of the project. It's been a great source of employment for people in the energy industry supply chain. And now, with project production slowing, these employment opportunities are in jeopardy. So bearing in mind that full-scale production for the BP and Shell project is years away, my question for the minister is, what is the minister doing to secure new opportunities for the province's energy supply chain?
The Honourable Minister of Energy. Speaker, the department, as is done on almost annual basis, puts out calls for bids for some of the parcels on our offshore. That will be done as well, as we encourage companies who want to come explore in Nova Scotia. As the member indicated, we're very excited by the opportunities with Shell beginning their exploratory work this summer, and certainly look forward to seeing the results of that. Mr. Speaker, as always, the Department of Energy strives to promote our offshore industry and to encourage private companies to come and make investments in our province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One way to ease the negative employment pressures from Deep Panuk's slowdown is to try to find new ways to create jobs in the short term for the energy industry. And I have an idea for the Minister. Developing our onshore resources might just be the way to do that. So my question for the Minister is, can we expect the Minister to review his ban on fracking that was put in place on onshore natural gas development? And when can we expect that review to happen?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, part of the success we've had in our offshore has been with the work that was done by previous governments with their support, the Playfair analysis that was done. We're doing the same thing with our onshore and trying to see exactly where are there potential deposits or potential opportunities for energy work to be done on our onshore. Mr. Speaker, it's very important that we be able to have the science behind us to share with all interested parties as to where these hydrocarbons or others may be located in our province. I know, Mr. Speaker, that the leader of the official opposition believes in the Jed Clampett approach of trying to find hydrocarbons in our province. We'd rather rely on science.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Idwowisht. Hachinula Tukchin Givel Luach Ounz Gachkanen Agus Duochus Savor Roisho Agus Givel Eat Gubanach Gubuandach Nan Ur Alabanach Ula. Mr. Speaker, we understand that all languages and cultures in this province have value and they greatly benefit Nova Scotians. My question to the Minister of Education. In January, the Minister released an action plan. One of the stated goals is to encourage more cultural diversity in our schools, and that included a teacher recruitment campaign to attract Acadian, African Nova Scotian, and Mi'kmaq teachers. There is no mention of Gaelic teachers. Mr. Speaker, there is also no mention of Gaelic in the Equity Education Program. Why was Gaelic not included?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will be checking Hansard to ensure that the member was not speaking ill of the minister as he first started. It is true, in our action plan, we did acknowledge the importance of language, culture, and history of African Nova Scotian, Gaelic, Acadian, and Mi'kmaq communities in our province and of the peoples that we have here. When we looked at the recruitment, as I have indicated, we looked at identifying three of those, an omission, the Gaelic should have been there. No problem.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
It wowerst, I can tell you and that minister that I would never speak ill of her. The report highlights the need to encourage cultural awareness, and I appreciate the minister's comments. In our school system. And one school I've heard of recently that makes me very proud is in Waghaghma. They're actually teaching four languages under one roof there, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this cannot be done if we leave out cultures that are important to our province. The minister has agreed, I think, to revisit this omission. So in recognizing that we've achieved the goal here, I'm not going to ask a further question.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier said that his government was not cutting the dental coverage program for children up to age 17, as he committed in the election with a long lot of other things that have not been done. And immediately after question period, the Health Minister revealed to reporters that he had in fact suspended the program of extending coverage to children up to age 17. Certainly, he did not seem to have informed the Premier of this decision. Therefore, can the Premier explain why his minister didn't inform him that he cut a program, that he made a commitment and promise to the people of Nova Scotia during the election.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. And yesterday I said in this House, in answer to the question, that we have not cut the dental program. Mr. Speaker, March 31st, this province, every Nova Scotia, young Nova Scotian that was covered by that program is covered by today. Mr. Speaker, what the Minister talked about is an expansion of that program. I want to explain the difference between a cut and expansion. A cut is what they did to Nova Scotia classrooms in the last 4 years, Mr. Speaker. An expansion is the investment we're making in them now.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps I should talk to the Premier about the difference between a broken promise and a commitment over and over and over again in the election that it's going to be expanded to 8 to 17 years of age. Yesterday, when the Minister of Health announced that he had cut the youth dental care program, he also announced that he had struck a secret review committee to look at the program. I find it interesting with the most open and transparent government that they have this secret review committee. So can the Premier tell Nova Scotians when his Minister of Health struck this secret review panel, what the secret review panel is doing, and who sits on the secret review panel?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, a commitment is reinvesting the $65 million back in education that we said we were going to do. A commitment, Mr. Speaker, is restructuring health care, Mr. Speaker, under one board like we said we were going to do, Mr. Speaker. A commitment, Mr. Speaker, is continuing to get government out of the way and let the private sector grow the economy, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, a broken promise, Mr. Speaker, is raising the HST from 13 to 15%.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, Northern Inverness County. My question is for the Minister of Transportation. Northern Inverness County was identified by the previous government as a remote region for paving. Each year they would pick three areas. They would spend about $3 million in each area, the goal to pave about 30 kilometres in those remote regions. Mr. Speaker, the plant that was established by the previous government was based on an identified need in remote areas. Does the Minister still believe that that need exists?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for her question. First and foremost, I certainly still believe that we made the right decision to scrap the government paving plant that wasn't in the best interest of Nova Scotia taxpayers, Mr. Speaker. And secondly, look, the reality is, and the member and I and many members in this House have had conversations about rural Nova Scotia and all regions of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. We simply have an infrastructure deficit. The amount of money we spend is significant, but it's nowhere near enough to cover the replenishing and the replacement and the rebuilding of the 23,000 kilometres that we have in this province. So certainly rural Nova Scotia, Inverness and Northern Cape Breton, no exception. There's needs, Mr. Speaker. We have our processes. We have our staff on the ground that do assessments, set priorities, and we do the best to fill those on an annual basis.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess I'm hearing from the Minister that he does believe that the need exists. Mr. Speaker, the only paving in Inverness in the five-year plan that's put out by government each year is on main routes, like Highway 105 and Route 19, Route 395, and there is a section on the Strathmore and Scottsville Road. But, Mr. Speaker, largely there's nothing planned for secondary roads. Can the Minister tell us what this government's plan is for people in Inverness County who are driving on these roads that have been established in the past as having a need to be paved in an area that is considered remote, that being Northern Inverness County?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, I have the sense that I'm going to get the invitation for the annual Inverness Road Tour. I'm sure the member and I will look forward to that. But the reality is that the member has a very good working relationship with our staff on the ground, with Steve McDonald and the other officials there with TIR. And at the end of the day, we look at what's required, obviously volumes, the amount of commercial activity, those important tourism routes, which certainly exist in Inverness and in many areas in the province. But, you know, the member would know that those priorities are set locally, and it's not just about those capital plan investments and items that are listed. It's also about the local road, which is in the RIM budget and other budgets. So I know that the member will continue to work closely with Steve, and we'll have conversations about what that member's priorities are for the people he represents. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. A report co-authored by Dell Law students shows that the department is not fulfilling its legal obligations with respect to protecting endangered species in Nova Scotia. And I'll table that in a few seconds, Mr. Speaker. Recovery plans are past due for more than 20 endangered species. Some of these recovery plans are 13 years late. Recovery plans that have been completed are required to be evaluated every 5 years, and DNR has yet to evaluate the Moose Recovery Plan since releasing it in 2007. Nova Scotia had enough moose to support a hunt on the mainland until 1981. Bob Bancroft, a wildlife biologist, wrote in the Chronicle Herald, "Moose management and protection are provincial government responsibilities that have failed." And I'll table that. My question to the minister, will the minister commit to fulfilling his department's lawful requirements to ensure future sustainability of endangered species?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Absolutely.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, I'd love to say when, but I'm still waiting for a walk along the Melmurby Beach that he promised me a couple of years ago. Well, anyway, Mr. Speaker, the report states if there's some reason that the law should be changed, and that's one thing, but to simply not fulfill their legal obligations is obviously not acceptable for a government. The Department of Natural Resources estimates that the mainland moose population has declined more than 85%. Hunting and wildlife organizations have been doing their part to combat poaching, but the department needs to show more leadership by addressing the other factors associated with the population decline. A spokesman for the department said a response to the report would be drafted once it was reviewed. Nearly 2 months have passed. My question to the minister, has the minister completed his response, and will the minister table it in the House today?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When it comes to the protection of our mainland moose, that is a priority for our department. Our policies across the board when it comes to forestry, economic development on any of our crown lands, the role that the policies we have in place are there to support our moose as best we can. There's setbacks, Mr. Speaker, and we work closely with our wildlife biologists to ensure we're doing our very best. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, medical specialists in Nova Scotia were informed their malpractice insurance won't be covered this year by the government in the same way it has been covered in the past. This has many specialists across our province, especially in rural communities, worried they won't be able to afford to continue working in Nova Scotia. We've received some mixed messages from the minister on this issue, so I'd like to ask the minister to clarify what percentage of medical malpractice fees does the government plan to cover this year?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In this area of the CMPA fees, they have been at 90%. We are currently in negotiations, and members of the obstetric gynecology area in particular that pay some of the highest malpractice fees in the province know that there would be, there would also be coverage from the start of this particular year through once the agreement is signed.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
So I'm hoping what the minister is saying, that he will continue to cover the malpractice insurance. So just to be very clear, I mean, we're seeing fees going from about $21,000 to about over $50,000 for these specialists. And many of them, Mr. Speaker, live in rural communities and provide care in rural communities. So we know that there's a negotiation going on, but that could take some time. probably over a year, Mr. Speaker, to come to an agreement. So will the minister commit today that these specialists will continue to get the support until the end of an agreement is made with the government?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I've spoken with a number of the obstetrician gynecologists in the province, and when you get fees that increase that dramatically, and especially for those who work part-time and for our GPs, it's indeed of great concern. And I know that it is an issue that Doctors Nova Scotia as well will be dealing with in the next day or two, and we hope to get a full resolve to this issue.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. In February, the Department decided to stop pushing through Phase 2 of the Occupational Health and Safety Regulations. Small businesses and employers throughout Nova Scotia told the Department loudly and clearly that these regulations are too complicated and would not work, something raised by my colleague from Pictou Centre last year in the Legislature. The way the department has bungled the process has created significant delays and shows how out of touch the government is with small business in the province. So my question to the minister, the department produced this large and complicated set of regulations and then proceeded to consult employers after the fact. Why didn't the department work with employers in drafting these regulations in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do believe that this was produced in consultation. The Workplace Safety Strategy was part of a large consultation, and I do appreciate the work that was done by the member for Pictou Centre in bringing the matter to my attention. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we just heard that times and limited resources are in government. Departments should allocate resources to the best possible use to achieve the best possible outcomes in the province. During this process, the department created significant confusion and apprehension for employers of the province. Now we appear to be back to square one. My question to the minister, how long did it take the department to draft the flawed Phase 2 regulations, and could the minister provide a cost to taxpayers of Nova Scotia for the department's mismanagement of this file?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While I appreciate the comments by the Honourable Member, I do reject his characterization of those particular regulations, and I will endeavour to get him an accurate figure on that. I believe it was in the $60,000 range, and what we heard from business was that they felt that we were moving too quickly and on this particular issue, and we listened to business, and I view that as a success. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, my first question today is for the Minister of Finance regarding the film and television tax credits. We've now heard what the government is planning to do, and I have to say that in talking with my peers in the industry, everybody is devastated by this decision of this government. They thought it was going to be bad, but they didn't know how bad, and they're feeling very, very... They're feeling that they were lied to by the government, who promised they would keep the television tax credit for the next 5 years. So my question for the minister is this: when did they decide they were going to gut the film and television tax credit as they have done? Has it been lately, or did they know this all along? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's really important that we start by stating the fact the film credit remains, the criteria remain, the maximum amount you could ask for is 65% of labour if you're eligible. None of those criteria have changed. The difference is how it will be paid out, Mr. Speaker. That's the one difference. We're asking that the industry look at this, move forward with us, and find ways to remain vibrant and here in the province.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I thank the minister for her answer, and I know it's very difficult being a minister in a government, especially a majority government, where you need to toe the line and do whatever is the you're told to do. However, I also know she understands the importance of this industry to Nova Scotia. What I don't think that she understands is that this is going to devastate the industry. And so my next question is for the Premier, and that is, does the Premier actually understand why the film tax credit is set up the way it is? Because right now, Nova Scotia is again at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to film tax credits in Canada. And Ontario, for instance, has a 35% tax credit plus stackables on top of that. So we are now at the bottom of the list, and that means our productions are going to go elsewhere. So how does the Premier suggest they're going to actually grow our creative economy in this environment?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I again want to echo what the Minister of Finance says. The criteria for the film tax credit has not changed, Mr. Speaker. You're still eligible for 50% tax credit and 65% in certain conditions, Mr. Speaker. Fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, in this province, how it's delivered has changed. 25% of it is Mr. Speaker, it's like the former government used to say about a forgivable loan. We used to call those grants, Mr. Speaker. This is not a tax credit. It's a non-refundable tax credit, Mr. Speaker. We put it out the door without anyone paying taxes. Do they actually think that we provide services in Nova Scotia without taxable income? What do they tell for autistic children? We don't have any money to invest you because we're giving non-forgivable grants, Mr. Speaker. What do they tell for those people on wait lists, Mr. Speaker? We don't have any money because we're giving non-forgivable grants, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, we've continued to invest in these tax
credits.
Order,
please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, the film tax credit still exists in this province. We're going to continue to move forward, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very proud of the fact that we've created, Mr. Speaker, another fund for the creative economy, Mr.
Order,
Speaker,
please.
That will be broader.
Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise on a point of order. During question period today, the Minister of Energy referred to our policy on onshore gas development as the Jed Clampett approach. That actually does raise a very important question of order, Mr. Speaker, because as you will know, Jed Clampett was a very rich man who lived in a big mansion, and he had a cement pond, Mr. Speaker, as you may recall. Had Jed Clampett lived in the province of Nova Scotia under that minister and this government, he would be poor indeed because his source of income would be banned, and so I ask the minister to retract his remarks.
It's not a point of order. That's a disagreement of television facts. The Honourable Member for Halifax Atlantic.
Mr. Speaker, I beg leave to make an introduction. In East Gallery today, we are joined by former MLA for...